embassy was no longer an embassy. Well, all embassies have centers of information. They gather information about the country where the embassy is located. They collect the data and send it to their own country. There is nothing wrong with that. This wasn't the case with the U.S. embassy. The problem with the U.S. embassy was that it was a place for conspiring against the revolution. They would meet people, provoke people, create organizations, use any remnants of dissatisfaction remaining from the former regime, and if possible, they would rally the army to take action against the revolution. The students understood this. When they realized this, they stayed in the embassy. Now, for one to question, why did they take over the embassy? And to say that our problem with the US arose from that point is an inaccurate statement in my view. First, our problem with the US didn't begin with the event that took place on the 13th of Aban, November 4th, 1979. It began on the 28th of Mordad, 1953. The Iranian nation's opposition to the U.S. dates back to that time. Second, the 13th of Aban actually signified the discovery of a plot and a great danger to the revolution. The students discovered this, God bless them. They were able to gather the documents. With great difficulty, they pieced together the documents that had been put through the shredding machine and were able to realize what had been going on inside the embassy. The U.S. couldn't tolerate the revolution. Because the revolution had ripped a sweet morsel right out of the U.S.'s throat, Iran had been an unparalleled prize that was in the possession of the U.S. Iran was entirely under the domination and power of the U.S. The U.S. took Iran's oil, they plundered its underground resources, they seized its facilities and its money, they sold whatever goods they wanted to Iran at whatever price they pleased. This was what the situation had been like, and then this was taken away from the U.S.
Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done.
everyone, Ali Reza here back with a brand new episode of Iran Tech. And in this week's episode, we're going to be focusing on what is going on in the bleeding edge of the world of oral and maxillofacial surgeries and the role that prosthetics and implants, more specifically, 3D printed custom patient-specific prosthetics are playing in that realm while being assisted by an actual professional oral and maxillofacial surgeon who's also a university professor. So stay tuned as we get started. Over a few scenarios in which a maxillofacial surgery would be necessary. We of course have congenital defects, defects and malformities in the facial bone structure that may happen at birth. Some parts of the skull may just be entirely missing, which would need to be replaced with an implant, because there's very little you can do with the bone outside of replacing it or taking it out entirely and again replacing it with a prosthetic. Then, of course, we have traumatic injuries, injuries that may be caused as a result of an accident, some workplace incidents, or maybe two people just having a fight. A motorbike rider could hit his chin on the ground and break his jaw. And again, you can't do very much with that jaw. You can't really repair it. You must essentially replace it with something like a prosthetic, which we're going to get to. Then, of course, we have certain infections and pathological diseases that could cause erosion in the facial bone structure. We even saw some cases in the post-COVID era, or rather post-patients getting COVID era, where certain infections, certain types of fungi would grow in this area and would cause erosion in the facial bone structure. We have cancer tumors, which are a primary suspect for maxillofacial surgeries. Cancer tumors can completely erode a certain part of the skull by the cancer tumors growing and replacing those healthy cells. And again, you have to just take out those and the entirety of that cancer tumor and replace it with something. So this is where custom-made 3D-printed prosthetics come into play, because we have traditionally been treating these conditions by using off-the-shelf parts most of the time. This is not a new surgical procedure. It's just that now that the modern thing about it is the replacement of off-the-shelf parts with custom-printed, patient-specific parts that can even replicate the contour of the jaw without too much grinding to make the off-the-shelf part fit the facial structure, the bone structure of the specific patient. So now, let's listen to Dr. Bayot, who's a surgeon performing maxillofacial surgeries on a daily basis. Tell us more about these conditions, and also where Iran is with regards to the bleeding edge of what is going on in the science of maxillofacial surgeries.
We required the fabrication of a custom prosthesis for the patient, which necessitates specific software filters and resources, all of which are now available within Iran's domestic capabilities. This includes a specialized software for virtual design and reconstruction, as well as a trained workforce proficient in using these tools developed through local university research centers. The process relies on advanced 3D printing technology with printers manufactured domestically. For practical models, FDM or resin-based printers are used, while the final medical-grade implants are produced through laser sintering of titanium powder, a technique that ensures biocompatibility. Each prosthesis undergoes rigorous post-processing involving physical and chemical treatments before it is approved for surgery. Furthermore, Iran has developed the capacity to produce patient-specific implants through local knowledge-based companies. The quality of these domestically produced implants matches or exceeds international standards in certain aspects. We are committed to expanding these capabilities and continue to integrate digital surgical guides and 3D printing technologies into standard implant procedures, consistently delivering advanced medical solutions to patients.
And Now let's take a closer look at one of these actual implants. There's not too many of them available here because each one of them that is built for a specific procedure, and they're used and they're probably in the patient's face right now, but there are a couple available. So they're made of titanium. They're all custom 3D printed to be patient specific, and they're used in a variety of different oral and maxillofacial surgical procedures. So this one is a mandibular implant. Let's take a look at a couple of the other examples that are used. Let's take a look at a specific model that is used for an orthognathic procedure, which involves cutting the jaw and realigning it for your teeth to align perfectly fine. So this one, you can see that there's a cutting guide for the surgeon, and you may assume that you can just cut anywhere around the jaw to be able to realign it, but no. The cut has to be optimal so as to minimize the potential damage to the patient. Maybe there's a root canal underneath this cut that needs to be avoided. So there is an optimal cut, and using this guide, the surgeon can optimally cut the jaw to be able to realign it. Now, of course, for the realignment itself, there are a couple of other guides which will be used to measure where exactly the jaw needs to be, because these two pieces, which are going to be mounted onto the teeth, how these two pieces are going to align together. This will tell the surgeon where exactly he needs to fit and fix the new jaw alignments. And that fixing is going to be done using these custom plates. There's going to be screws to hold the new place where the jaw is in place. There's, of course, other types of implants that are used with the same procedure. We have the superior stall implants, which are used for patients that cannot take teeth implants like a normal patient. So maybe the bone structure is too weak and cannot hold a tooth. So for them, these superior stall implants are going to provide a placeholder for the tooth implants. And that's where the oral 3D scan, which we're going to be seeing in just a little bit, comes into play. So taking a look at the manufacturing process, there's a couple of prerequisites that need to be checked before we start manufacturing this custom implant, and that is the combination of the 3D imaging capabilities of a CAT scan with this oral 3D scanner. This is not emitting any kind of x-rays or anything like that. It's just like a regular camera that is right here, and it's using a mirror to be able to image the inside of the mouth, and particularly the alignment of the tooth and the gums, because once these implants are made, there are certain holes that need to be put in the implants to very accurately tell the surgeon where the implant tooth is going to be added, because those holes are where the implant's teeth are going to be filled in with. So with that said, now that you've seen this imaging system, of course you're going to see some CAT scans too. Now let's take a closer look at the manufacturing process after the imaging system has been gone through.
Titanium implants have proven so far to be the best type of implant when an implant is necessary in facial reconstruction or cosmetic surgeries. This is due to their strength, biocompatibility, and ability to integrate with bone, or osseointegration. However, like any medical procedure, there can be potential complications or issues associated with titanium implants in the face, but they're not 100% free of risks or complications. The biggest inconvenience is that metal is more sensitive to temperature changes, particularly in cold weather, when you may feel that the implant has gotten way colder than the rest of your body temperature, and you would feel it. Over long periods, the implant may also move a bit and cause asymmetry, as rare as it may be, or put a bit too much pressure on the bones around it, can cause deformation. As rare as both these cases may be, there must be a better way to go about these procedures. What if there was a material that could gradually degrade over time and be replaced by your actual bones? That means it can be metal, with all desirable and not so desirable properties that it brings. This is where we delve into the uncharted territory of bioimplants.
در یکی از کیس هایی که ما از این تکنولوژی استفاده کردیم
In one of the cases where we used these technologies, the patient had a benign mandibular tumor that needed to be removed. First, we performed a surgery virtually in a virtual space and created the surgical guide. We built the guide for the specific location where the pathological bone needed to be cut. We went into the operating room, installed the guide on the patient's jaw, and made the cut exactly where the bone was to be removed. After this stage, we fixed a custom-made patient-specific plate onto the remaining part of the jaw. Because it had been completely pre-designed, even the holes used for the guide matched the holes for the screws on a final prosthetic plate. It fits into place with 100% accuracy, causing no cosmetic damage to the patient, and the contour and shape of the patient's face and jaw are completely preserved. Following this stage and the installation of the plate, using the scans we had previously taken of the patient's teeth, we 3D printed teeth that were identical to the patient's own and delivered them to the patient in the same session, right in the operating room. This means the patient enters the operating room with a tumor, undergoes surgery and reconstruction, including dental reconstruction. The patient comes in with their teeth and leaves the operating room fully reconstructed, with both bone and teeth restored. This is truly one of the most advanced procedures that can be performed using these technologies.
The implants that were explained, the titanium implants that are now being manufactured as customized and PSI, patient-specific implants, are the latest products currently being used in global markets for patients and have resolved many issues. However, the technology of implants, in terms of materials, is related to second-generation biomaterials, and now third- and fourth-generation materials are also entering the market. These are materials that are biodegradable, and after a certain period, the body decomposes them, allowing natural tissue to replace the materials. The fourth generation even involves the use of living cells or tissues to create materials. Technically, and in terms of using 3D bioprinting technology, we have achieved self-sufficiency in our country, thanks to God, and we are benefiting from the services provided by domestic knowledge-based companies.
The titanium implant that I showed you are considered second-generation implants, the first one being off-the-shelf parts that I mentioned. The third generation is the biodegradable implants that we just talked about. And fourth generation, which is by no means widely used yet, are biomimetic implants. They're still in the research phase, but they essentially involve the same biodegradable implant that we showed you with biomolecules, proteins, or drugs, or other cells that a medical professional may deem to be helpful or necessary for the integration of the implant within the facial structure, to be added within the perforation to create a biomimetic implant. Now, these biomimetic implants could help, like I said, a better, faster integration of the implants within the facial structure, but they are by no means yet financially, or rather commercially available yet. So if that actually starts to develop within this facility, we're definitely going to be coming back to check it out. And with that said, we've come to the end of this episode of Iran Tech. Thank you, guys.
option for today and a better tomorrow. IRIB English Radio. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en.
Ask the followers of the remembrance if ye know not.
You are listening to the program The Key on Iran Radio with Sheikh Shiraz.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Welcome to our program The Key here at IRIB English Radio. Today on The Key, we're going to be asking a very important question, and that question is related to one of the stages of the hereafter. As you know, the hereafter has various stages or stopping points, which we call manazil in Arabic, which begin with death and then continue all the way up to, the gathering in the hereafter, and then the weighing of the good deeds and bad deeds of a person. One of the stations of the hereafter, the akhirat, is the grave or the qabr. When a person enters, once a person dies, he's taken into the grave. One of the things that will happen is that he will be questioned about certain things related to his life. And in fact, this is the first stage, or, maybe if we don't consider death the first stage, of the hereafter. The Holy Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam said, "The grave is the first station of the hereafter. If one is saved from it, whatever comes after it is easier. And if he is not saved from it, whatever comes after it is no less difficult than it." The question we want to ask today with respect to this topic is, what are the things that a person will be questioned about when he goes into the grave? In this regards, we can take inspiration from some of the hadith which have been passed down to us from the infallibles regarding this topic. In general, the Holy Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam said, with regards to this verse of the Holy Quran, "Allah fortifies those who have faith with an immutable word in the life of this world and in the hereafter." The Prophet said this is regarding the grave, when the dead are interrogated. Meaning, if somebody had faith in this world, when he goes into the grave and he's asked about, the things we're going to mention, Allah will help him and assist him at that time. Imam Sadiq alayhi salam said, "A dead person will be questioned about five things: his prayer, the salat; his alms tax, meaning the zakat; his obligatory pilgrimage, the hajj; his fasting, the sawm; and his acceptance of our divine guardianship, acceptance of the leadership of the imams, the wilayat of the Ahlul Bayt." So these are the things that with respect to the actions that a person performed in this world. In continuation, the Imam said, "Our guardianship, our wilayat, will address the other four from inside the grave, saying, 'Any deficiency that is in you, I will fill.'" Meaning, so if a person, followed the orders and ordinances of the Ahlul Bayt, or it could mean that if he at least believed in it firmly, then the deficiencies that were contained in the other things, those other actions, will be fulfilled, will be made up for, and will be, will be made up for. Imam Sadiq alayhi salam also said, "A person will not be questioned in their grave unless they have total pureness of faith or total disbelief. This is, of course, this could mean a number of things. One of the things that it could mean is that this questioning in the grave is not for each and every person. This is with respect to certain individuals. Some of our ulama have interpreted it in this way. Thank you for joining us here on The Key. We were looking at the questioning in the grave and what a person will be questioned about and who will be questioned in light of the hadith of the infallibles, alayhi wasalam. Until next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
You just listened to the program The Key on Iran Radio with Sheikh Shiraz.
You can also send your questions to English Radio at irib.ir.
Searching for the light, and you see no hope in sight. Be sure and have no doubt, He is always close to you. He's the one who knows you best. He knows what's in your heart. You'll find your peace at last if you just have faith in Him. You're always in my heart and mind. Your name is mentioned every day. You know, my what, my biggest wish is to see you one day. 'Cause I believe, I believe, I believe. Do you believe? Oh, oh, oh. Do you believe?
'Cause I believe. Used to be so full of love and harmony. He fought for peace and liberty, and never would he hurt anything. He was a mercy for mankind, a teacher till the end of time. A creature could be compared with him, so full of light and blessings. You're always in my heart and mind. Your name is mentioned every day. I believe.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Iruba Shavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Puraza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Aminolemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
On the slopes of Mount Hermon, Syrians and Palestinians rallied in Beit Jinn near the capital, denouncing repeated Israeli raids and offering condolences to the families shattered by the latest Israeli raid on the village.
They stormed our homes at dawn, terrorizing families with gunfire. We defended ourselves with what we had, inflicting casualties, but their warplanes destroyed entire homes with the residents inside. We appealed to the UN, the Arab nations, and the world, but no one responded.
Protesters marched through the village's narrow streets, condemning the attack that killed 13 people and wounded 25. They said their grief will only strengthen their resolve to remain on their land and stand with the families of the fallen.
I am the father of Mohammed Amin Ibrahim. We see martyrdom in defense of our land as source of pride and dignity. We fear no one but God. They attacked our homes and our dignity, but we stood our ground because we had to.
The village also celebrated the release of detainee Ali Qasim Hamad, arrested in late June. His return galvanized residents who renewed their rejection of normalization and reaffirmed their commitment to liberating every occupied Syrian and Palestinian territory.
We are here to reject normalization with the Zionists. Every inch of Syria belongs to Syrians, and the Zionist entity has no place here. One day, we will liberate all occupied lands from Syria to Palestine.
In Beit Jinn, grief has transformed into a collective vow of resilience. Locals say the attack may have claimed lives, but it has only strengthened their resolve to defend both their land and their future. Ali Muhammad, Damascus.
Despite heightened U.S. and Israeli pressures on Lebanon, Hezbollah Secretary General Sheikh Naim Qassem says the resistance will not give up its only defensive capability. In a televised speech Friday, he emphasized that Hezbollah has no regard for U.S. and Israeli dictates.
We are cooperating with the government, which has taken the diplomatic route to end the aggression, and we are supporting it in its efforts. The U.S. and Israel have no business in dictating how we manage our internal affairs. Whatever we decide in Lebanon or what we do in Lebanon, whether on the issue of arms or other issues, does not concern them. The only framework which needs to be met in dealing with the Israeli enemy is the ceasefire agreement. We have complied, but Israel has not.
The Hezbollah chief said Israel's aggressions have nothing to do with Hezbollah's weapons. He said the regime seeks to lay the groundwork for the gradual occupation of Lebanon and push for its greater Israel project. Sheikh Qassem warned that if Lebanon concedes, the U.S.-Israeli conditions will not be limited to the issue of arms. Experts believe that while the U.S. and Israel are jointly working on one agenda, they might differ on the means.
One area where they might disagree is in terms of how far to go to eliminate Hezbollah. I think the Israelis would want to do that at all costs. I think for the Americans, at least for some people in the Trump administration, they realize that America has interests in Lebanon. By the way, they're building their biggest embassy in Lebanon. So would all-out chaos serve American interests in the end? If you want to have a big embassy, if you want to be influential in Lebanon, I think you need stability.
The speech coincided with a visit of a delegation of the UN Security Council members who met with Lebanese leaders and stressed the significance of the implementation of UN resolutions. During the meeting, Lebanese President Joseph Aoun urged the Security Council to pressure Israel to respect the ceasefire and withdraw from Lebanon. Experts believe UN resolutions are theoretically a framework for peace, while Israel has implemented none.
Basis for peace are these resolutions. They're supposed to be applied. For example, Resolution 242 calls for the withdrawal of the Israelis from the West Bank and Gaza and the Golan Heights and Jerusalem, whereas the Israelis are expanding their occupation in Golan Heights. They are occupying parts of South Lebanon. They occupy Gaza. They are trying to also do an ethnic cleansing in the West Bank. They continue to kidnap a large number of Lebanese in violation of the ceasefire agreement, which is part of the Resolution 1701.
When asked about how the UN can enforce an Israeli withdrawal from Lebanon, the Russian ambassador to the UN told Press TV that he hopes diplomatic efforts can bear fruit.
We can do whatever we can in the Council, but the Council doesn't have military means, of course.
During their meetings with Lebanese leaders, the UN delegation voiced support for stability in Lebanon. President Joseph Aoun stressed that Lebanon has always cooperated with the United Nations, but the main obstacle now, he said, was the Israeli occupation and aggression. Mariam Saleh, Beirut.
Students have begun returning to the shattered campuses of Gaza's universities, reopening notebox among collapsed lecture halls in another act of defiance against the near-total collapse of the territory's higher education system.
The Islamic University is back to schooling today, sending a strong message of hope and determination. During the genocidal war, the Israeli army has deliberately destroyed most of the university's buildings and facilities. However, for us and for our people, education is a priority despite all the challenges. Now we've managed to reopen engineering, sciences, and nursing sections.
The devastation is perhaps most evident at the Islamic University of Gaza, once the largest academic institution in the territory, where buildings have been reduced to rubble, laboratories destroyed, and libraries set ablaze.
We are back to school again. Despite the challenges and the crises unfolding in every aspect of life, despite the transportation crisis and the lack of possibilities, we insist to continue learning. It is their target to decimate our education systems, but we are here to challenge them.
The students have returned, despite the challenges of lacking learning materials, electricity, and coming on foot from distant areas.
Today marks our first day back after 2 years of genocide. The university lies in ruins, yet we are eager to return and continue the educational journey we began. The challenges are immense, both for the institution and for us as students. We navigate destroyed roads with great difficulty from our displacement areas, but there is a sense of relief in finally reclaiming a normal life.
In the ruins of Gaza's shattered campuses, the act of learning has become an assertion of existence, an insistence that even amid wreckage, an educated future is still worth striving for. Adam Rahim for Gaza City, Palestine.
In a shocking development, Iraq's official newspaper published a set of government decisions, the most notable of which was the freezing of assets belonging to Lebanon's Hezbollah and Yemeni's Ansarullah resistance groups, and listing them as a terrorist organization. The Iraqi government quickly issued a statement, though the Prime Minister Mohammed Shia Sudani denying the decision, while directing an urgent investigation to identify those who were responsible for the mistake.
I believe what happened is a mistake that affects the dignity, will, and conscience of Iraq and Iraqis. Acknowledging the mistake is good, but addressing those responsible, punishing them, and investigating those behind them is necessary. At the same time, there should be vigilance because in the future, there might be greater embarrassment for the government and state, which could harm the reputation of the Iraqi people.
As Sudani affirmed that the Iraqi government is dealing with this error with a full seriousness, stressing that it does not reflect Iraq's real position and that the corrective measures must be taken to fix the course and prevent such mistakes from reappearing in official decisions in the future. Meanwhile, observers believe that this list may have been an attempt to court the United States.
We were taken by surprise in media and political circles when a decision emerged from the Anti-Money Laundering Committee, formed by the General Secretariat of the Council of Ministers, whose outcomes were published in the official newspaper. Upon verification, it became clear that the decision included placing Lebanon's Hezbollah and Yemen's Ansarallah on the terrorism list and freezing their assets. Such a classification contradicts the policy of the Iraqi government, goes against the sentiments and fundamental principles of the Iraqi people, and is inconsistent with the guidance of the religious authorities, which have repeatedly stressed the importance of supporting the Palestinian cause.
The Iraqi Central Bank issued a statement removing Hezbollah and Ansarullah from the list, but a wave of questions has emerged in Iraq about how such incorrect wording made its way into an official document, and as attention turns to the result of the investigation ordered by the Prime Minister, the major question remains: how did these errors reach the official gazette, and what are the potential political implications? Between denials and political reaction, the most important question remains: was the list issued by the Iraqi government under American pressure following the recent official visit of the U.S. State Department, or was it a mistake as described in the Prime Minister Mohammed Shah Sudani's statement? Nawar Faik, Baghdad.
Different in color and culture, but united by a shared agenda of fighting terrorism, military units from Shanghai Cooperation Organization member states participated in Sahand 2025, a five-day joint anti-terrorism exercise hosted by Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps Grand Force, the northwestern city of Tabriz.
The armed forces of the Islamic Republic of Iran, as a flag bearer in the global fight against terrorism, are proud to host the counterterrorism exercise under the leadership of the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, which is itself the leading force in counterterrorism efforts.
All 10 full members of the SCO, including China, Russia, India, Pakistan, Iran, Belarus, Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, Tajikistan, and Uzbekistan, took part in the exercise, which brought together a total of 120 personnel. Observers from SCO dialogue partners such as Oman, Azerbaijan, Saudi Arabia, and Iraq were also present.
In this exercise, we will conduct simulations of scenarios involving engagement with terrorists using live ammunition. After monitoring the terrorist adversary and engaging step by step up to the moment of decisive contact, the terrorist's route is blocked and they are pushed back. Ultimately, we will carry out an aerial assault using helicopters and heliborne insertion. Hostage rescue and search and rescue operations will also be conducted.
Fighting terrorist groups such as the U.S. and Israeli-backed Jaish al-Adl in the east and the Kurdish militant group PKK in the west have put Iran at the forefront of the fight against terrorism, with the IRGC leading the efforts.
Iran has long-standing and classical experience in counterterrorism. We welcome the sharing of these experiences within the regional anti-terrorist structure. We are now here to witness the implementation of joint exercise plans.
With these kind of drills, member states try to upgrade their capabilities and also to share their knowledge and experience in fighting terrorist groups. Terrorism knows no borders and requires a joint response. The IRGC brings extensive field experience, having fought Daesh in Iraq and Syria under the leadership of the anti-terror commander, Martyr Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani.
The evolution toward a new global order has made the world's largest group of countries eager to pursue a realistic understanding of terrorism. That is why the SCO member states believe Iran is the right place to prepare against the phenomenon.
We want peace, but peace with sovereignty, peace with equality, peace with freedom. We do not want the peace of slaves, nor do we want the peace of colonies. Never colonies, never slaves.
Nunca! The statements by the Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro Moros are in response to the multiple attacks facing the Bolivarian Republic. Maduro was addressing crowds of his supporters outside the presidential palace in Caracas. He warned that Venezuela will resist any attempt to impose a political change by force. Meanwhile, the national government denounced the theft of Citgo Petroleum Corporation by a U.S. court, together with sectors of the Venezuelan extreme right, as part of an operation to plunder the assets of the Venezuelan people.
La empresa Citgo es un valioso.
Citgo is a valuable asset of Petróleos de Venezuela, which the U.S. government intends to plunder by means of legal proceedings that are clearly contrary to law.
De un procedimiento judicial.
Precisely, the Venezuelan government previously denounced before OPEC that the Trump administration is attempting to provoke regime change in order to seize its assets and oil reserves, the largest in the world. For this reason, the National Assembly defends the national sovereignty over this resource and its industry.
But we in this caucus, all the parliamentarians here are going to vote in favor of this draft agreement because when the homeland is in danger, anything is permitted except not defending it.
The amount of resources that have been plundered from the country cannot be described at this time.
Parliamentarians, in line with the government and its defense of natural resources, approved this draft agreement that condemns the theft from the people, orchestrated by the most radical and submissive opposition, as well as by the United States government and its multiple attacks on the Bolivarian Republic.
From all instances, Venezuela stands resolute to maintain its independence and to preserve its resources. Those are the premises that are the cornerstone of the Bolivarian Revolution and the current policies by the government facing new forms of attacks. Gladys Quesada, Caracas, Venezuela.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
A very good day to you, and thank you for joining us here on Iran Radio, where every broadcast is crafted to bring you closer to what matters. And here are some interesting facts about the Holy Quran. In total, 25 prophets are mentioned in the Holy Quran in different surahs. Prophet Moses, or Musa in Arabic, peace be upon him, is mentioned 136 times in the Holy Quran, making him the most mentioned prophet of all in the Holy Book of Allah. The literal meaning of the word Quran is the which is being read. The word Quran is repeated 70 times in the Book of Allah itself. The month of Ramadan is the only month of the year mentioned in the Holy Quran in verse 185 of chapter Al-Baqarah, second chapter. This voice is reaching you from the capital Tehran, ready to share a lineup filled with meaning with you. Our upcoming program is Viewpoints, a powerful roundtable where today's most pressing issues from the Islamic world take center stage. From religion to politics, culture to society, we unpack what matters most with a special focus on the latest headlines from Muslim communities across the globe. Following this program, we have another segment of radio productions for this hour. Then it's time for The Teacher, a deep, enriching review of Islamic and Shia theology and ethics. Join our hosts and scholars as they walk us through key principles that shape a conscious and faith-filled life. Coming up next, it's Viewpoints. Stay with us.
IRIB English Radio presents
Viewpoints.
The presence of different scholars.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum. Welcome to another episode of the program Viewpoints with me, Atta, the host of this program. Shaykh Hussein and Sister Zainab are over here in today's discussion. Assalamu alaikum to both of you.
Alaikum assalamu rahmatullah and assalamu alaikum to your dear listeners.
Wa alaikum assalam, brother, and to all the listeners.
Okay, the crisis in Sudan, a devastating conflict, a complex one. When you look at the footage and the videos of the people who are being massacred over there, it's really harsh. And some people might ask, what's the main reason? As long as the peace treaty between Hamas and Israel is signed, Sheikh Latifi, something else, another complex, another thing is going to happen in another part of the world. This time, Sudan, okay? The so-called people who were after peacemaking is Sudan. For example, one of them, this lady Ala Salah, for example, you know, she was famous on that time. Where is she now? She's living in her cozy place in London and does not say anything about Sudan crisis. Give us a background, a history of what took place in Sudan and what is taking place in Sudan now.
Okay, we always need to have some perspective about what's taking place politically. And in Sudan, in the case of Sudan, if I want to simplify it and hopefully not oversimplify it, you know, after the Islamic Revolution in Iran, some Muslim countries, they were inspired by this revolution, okay? And not just by being Islamic, by being anti-Western, anti-colonial, anti-Israel.
All right.
And one of these nations, they were Sudanese nation. The Sudanese, 10 years after the Islamic Revolution in Iran, they had this chance to have some changes in their policies. And then Omar al-Bashir came to power. And Omar al-Bashir, he had all the things that the West didn't like. He allied with Iran. He was anti-Zionist. He wanted independence of Sudanese resources. And then, as it happens, the West does not the West does not like a player in the region like this.
And Sudan was safe, isn't it?
Yes.
There was no civil war or something. Peace was over there, isn't it?
Oh, yes. You always have political, social divide.
Yeah, conflicts are
any nations. Okay. Like in U.S., you don't have social divide. You have social divide. Okay. Let me tell you something. There was this interview with the former CIA head that I was listening to. The guy said that we do not start a divide in nations. What we do is called lever strategy. You know what lever is? Something that they put in a crack and they open it and enlarge it.
Yeah.
So he said that we find a divide, we put our lever there, and we do not allow it to heal. Okay? This is what they do.
Wow.
So they did it in Syria. They're trying to do it in Iran because you have social divide over hijab, over whatever here and there.
Yes.
In Sudan, because of the tribal background and everything, you had social divide there. So, but it was a functioning country. It was the breadbasket of Africa. Sudan, like Syria. Syria before like 10, 15 years ago, Syria was a role model for independent Arab nation, flourishing economy, everything good.
Yes.
And then they just made it collapse. They destroyed it.
You know that according to the statistics, the tourism industry was the most profitable industry in the whole Arab regions, okay, in Syria.
Yeah, I remember the time before, that our friends, we would go there.
Both for religious things and for, we can say, ancient, antique things, you know, they go, that's right.
So Sudan, in the African context, after Libya was a flourishing, good country, then, because the only crime that they had was they were anti-Zionist after Omar al-Bashir. So they started demonizing Omar al-Bashir, this dictator, this, that. And people in these countries, they have problems. I'm not saying Omar al-Bashir was infallible or whatever.
Okay.
No, people, they have problems. Yes. And also people had sufferings, but some of the sufferings were the results of the sanctions that the West had imposed. So they create this mentality, this calculation for the youth. You have problems, and the source of the problem is this guy. If you topple this, we're going to lift the sanction and everything.
All right.
So with this calculation, and then you had some problem about the prices going up because of the sanctions and everything.
Yes. Inflation and stuff.
Yes.
Right.
So people, they came to the conclusion, okay, let's get rid of this dictatorship and we want freedom. As you said, that lady, you always have the humanitarian thing that they have it.
Allah Salah, that's
as
right.
As if they care. Now, I mean, the Americans, they care about humanitarian issues. It's funny.
Okay.
Even if it's very naive to think that they care about these things.
Okay.
So they toppled Omar al-Bashir. They call it a, for example, democratic revolution or whatever, which was orchestrated, I believe, from afar, and also some elements, internal elements. Anyways, so after that, then the problems started. Currently, what we have in Sudan, we have two military groups. One of them is called RSF, Rapid Support Forces, and the other is Sudanese Armed Forces, SAF.
Yes.
So Sudanese Armed Forces are the remaining of the central government military, and then you have RSF, which is a militia created initially by the government in order to take control of, because we have a geographical situation in Sudan, some areas that the central government cannot control and they have to have other militias controlling. Anyways, they started this, but it is out of their control now. Not that it is out of their control, they have become like a proxy for external
forces,
powers.
That's right.
Like UAE and the US, because of the resources. The other thing that you have is that nations with natural resources, they are a good victim for the ambitions of these powers.
That's right.
IRIB English Radio. Please follow our radio programs and podcasts on iranradio.ir.
So resource control is one of them. And Sister Zainab, we can say, in terms of the atrocities that are taking place over there, you know, the children being killed, the ladies, you know, being killed. And we see the footages are very much the same as the